Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. On today's program, I'll be presenting another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is Peter Sundquist. Sundquist became interested in radio at 17 and went on to work as a DJ at WVBR and WQNI. He was known as Peter Knight. He was in the radio business for 30 years. Throughout his life, he recognized many puzzling symptoms in himself: depression, sensitivity to loud sounds, difficulty following oral instructions, and face blindness. Finally, in January of this year, at the age of 53, he was diagnosed with autism, and we'll be talking to him today about that subject.
Hi, Tish.
Hi, nice to see you, Peter.
Nice to see you, too. It's been a while.
Yes. Now, let's talk about that. You've mentioned many traits such as withdrawing and not being able to speak in school and depression. How did your family deal with this? Did they know something was going on with you early on?
I think there was a suspicion, but it was never followed up on. When I was younger, autism wasn't really in the forefront. It wasn't so prevalent, or at least it wasn't diagnosed as often.
Yeah, yeah. And people weren't talking about things like that. It was
right.
considered mental illness, and it was sort of out of bounds.
Right. But I had some difficulties when I was growing up. I didn't talk in school for quite a few years. It was voluntary. It was just selective mutism. But I did not speak at all in school until I was in the sixth grade. That presented some interesting challenges.
Oh, I'll bet.
But people were pretty understanding, I think. So I got through it and managed to come across a teacher who was very helpful and really gave me a lot of encouragement and helped me get through that.
Yeah, I bet that was quite a challenge. You know what I want to talk about early on is I actually think it's quite amazing that you decided to go into broadcasting, considering you had a hard time communicating at first and so on. Do you think this helped you connect better with people and get out of your shell, or was it helpful in that way?
I think it was to a degree. I also think it was easier for me because when you're in radio, basically you're just talking to yourself. That's what it feels like. They tell you to imagine that you're talking to friends.
Yeah.
But you're literally sitting in a studio by yourself talking to a microphone. So I didn't really have the social difficulties because I was just socializing with a microphone essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So
you felt like you could continue hiding and sort of staying distant from the world?
Yeah.
By having
that
job? Even though we think of it as a public job, right?
It is to a degree, yeah. There is a public side to it, such as when radio stations have their personalities go out into the public and
yeah.
go to a big sale or a car dealership or something like that. And in my radio career, there were a couple of times where I was asked to do that, and I was very, very out of my comfort zone. It was completely different than being in a studio by myself.
Huh. Oh, that's so interesting that you had a career like that with all these struggles. Now, a lot of your symptoms are common to many people, like depression especially.
Yeah.
What led you to believe that there was something more going on with you? Or did it take a long time to figure that out?
It took quite a few years to figure it out, but looking back on my childhood, just behaviors that I recall dealing with myself and then learning that they were common to autism. Like what they call stimming.
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Which is just, it's a behavior that autistic people commonly do. It's just a repetitive motion or something.
With your hands
It's basically they're soothing themselves, their anxiety. And I don't really stim visibly. It's more very subtle stuff. Like if I'm trying to go to sleep, I find that I'm constantly moving.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just settle down. When I was much younger, I remember I would rock myself to sleep.
Oh.
Just, lay in bed and kind of rock back and forth until I tired myself out and was exhausted enough to go to sleep.
And so you thought some of these behaviors were somewhat strange, or did you think, that's just me?
Well, at the time, I thought it was just me. But looking back on it now, I realize that it probably was somewhat out of the ordinary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell us how you were diagnosed just last year. I mean, just the beginning of this year. How did that come about? You decided to go get tests, or you decided to talk to someone? How did you do that?
I had some mental health difficulties last year, which led to hospitalization for a couple of weeks. Mm. And the follow-up to that with the depression that I've had for most of my life just led me to explore more of what could be going on. And so I went to see a specialist in Syracuse for the diagnosis, and she said that I was showing signs of autism spectrum disorder. So,
Wow, God, were you shocked?
No, I wasn't really. It's something that I suspected for quite a while.
And you even had the term, right? You thought you might be autistic.
Right. I just didn't have someone to put, you know, the term to it. I knew something was probably different just based on how I grew up and my experiences, but it's just nice to have it on paper. So, you know, it's a confirmation.
Yeah.
It's the missing piece of the puzzle.
So you reacted positively to this. Tell me, what did you do anything differently? How did you progress from learning that you have this label on yourself now?
I'm still kind of learning about it. I haven't changed anything or done anything differently since then. I just got the diagnosis early this year, like January, but I am learning about different ways of coping with things that affect me because of the autism. So it's a long learning process.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah. I'll bet.
It's not something that, you know, you just change overnight.
Oh, yeah, or take a pill, like if you have a cold or something. How did your family react? Have they come to terms with it, or do they think they're to blame, or how did they react?
My family is not really that engaged. They know about it, but haven't really weighed in on it. I have a couple of nieces who are on the spectrum as well.
Wow.
So I kind of connected with them a little bit more. But I, you know, my family is like, well, you know.
At least we know or something, yeah. Right? How about with some of your friends?
I don't socialize that much. I tend to isolate, which I'm trying to not do because it's not a good behavior. I need to learn to connect with people better.
So in other words, you haven't talked to a lot of people about it, right?
Right.
Huh. Wow, this is quite interesting to me. Isn't it totally unusual to be diagnosed at such a late age?
I think it's pretty unusual. I think it's more common for children to be diagnosed on the spectrum. But there's a lot of adults that were never diagnosed, and they've dealt with the symptoms and difficulties their entire life without any support. And now that autism is much more in the public eye,
oh yeah,
I think people are starting to understand that, you know, there are adults out there too that need some support system and didn't have it when they were growing up, so.
Yeah. Well, it's the same as kids who are diagnosed as kids. I mean, most of them are going to live into adulthood.
Yeah.
So they need that kind of support as well.
Right.
Well, you mentioned that you're picked on in schools, and mainly because you were so quiet. Tell us how you dealt with that. Were you having temper tantrums? How were you dealing?
I generally just shrugged it off. I didn't react in a big way to people picking on me. I'm the kind of person that would just kind of walk away and ignore them as much as possible.
But did some of this personnel in school and teachers notice something? And did they ever mention something to you?
The teachers were very aware of things like that, but they, you know, they did the best they could with me not being able to communicate very effectively. There was bullying, but it wasn't really something that defined me.
Yeah. That's quite amazing that you were able to just shrug it off. I remember my brother had trouble with speech, and so did I a little bit because of speech impediments. And teachers constantly asked us if we were foreign. They thought we came from a foreign-speaking people. So maybe they just thought you were from a different kind of family, right? Did the schools ever try to put you into any kind of testing or in any kind of special classes because you were having such a hard time?
They never put me into special classes, just based on scores in, you know, regular testing. They were aware that I was intelligent. There was no intellectual impairment.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that I wouldn't speak. I think my teachers knew full well that I could speak. I was just voluntarily not speaking.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite that simple. There were obviously psychological reasons for why I wasn't speaking. It wasn't just like I decided, well, you know, I'm not going to speak.
Yeah. Just because.
Right.
During that time when you were having a hard time speaking or wouldn't speak, was that a conscious decision? Were you thinking, I should speak or I want to say this, and you couldn't?
I think it was that to a degree. It just became such a pattern, you know, it was second nature to me to not speak. I think it just became easier to relate to people in other ways, such as writing or whatever ways were available.
Yeah. Well, a lot of teachers probably in schools and probably friends and family just thought it was awkward adolescent behavior, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of kids are shy and, you know. So you got away with it for that reason, right?
Right.
Wow.
I did a lot of writing because back then there were no apps that you could put on a tablet that, you know, where you could just select an icon and have the you know, the device tell people what you wanted. So I had to write a lot.
I think that was probably quite helpful. I had never thought of people with autism communicating that way, but I'll bet it's prevalent. Huh. Did you find through the years that your symptoms were changing, getting better, getting worse? I mean, most kids are diagnosed as kids. I mean, so they're watching the progression of this. How was it being diagnosed so late in life? Did you notice changes once you had the diagnosis?
No, I wouldn't say I noticed any changes. Just became more aware of the symptoms, I think. Having the diagnosis really put it in the forefront of my mind, so I'm always thinking about it now instead of thinking about a past behavior or something like that and going, well, I wonder if that was connected to what I think I was dealing with. Now I know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Peter Sundquist. We're talking about the fact that he was diagnosed with autism at the age of 53. I find that remarkable enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you've always felt alone, even in the company of people. And I assume it made you more isolated because people probably interpreted that as unfriendly.
Yeah, I think that is part of it. I'm always afraid that I am perceived as being kind of unfriendly or standoffish, but that's really not me at all.
Mm-hmm. Or shy.
Shy, yeah. I was always considered shy, but I can be in a group of people, even people that I know, and I still feel isolated. I just don't really connect with people on that emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't read people's body language very well. Someone I know can change their hairstyle or, you know, I can see them out of the usual context and I might not even recognize them. In fact, I had that happen to me more than once in one of the jobs that I had where one of my coworkers showed up when not working, dressed a little differently, maybe with some makeup or something on, and I was like, didn't even recognize the person at first.
How did the person react, though? Did they just think,
Yeah, they just thought it was kind of amusing, but I think that's one thing that I do deal with is what they call face blindness.
Mm-hmm. Is that considered a symptom of autism?
That is a common symptom of autism. It doesn't mean that you don't recognize people at all. It just means, I think, that you have some difficulty. A lot of people recognize the people they know by their face. People who have face blindness in varying degrees, they have to learn to identify the people they know by other ways, like their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Or
the way their body moves, perhaps.
Their body language, the way they dress, their mannerisms. They sometimes struggle with recognizing faces.
Yeah.
That's why they call it face blindness.
Was that an impediment to you when you were working as a DJ?
No, not really, because I was talking to myself, getting back to being in a room, talking to yourself. So I never had that issue with not recognizing faces in radio.
So you didn't have live guests most of the time, right?
Right. A few times I did, but it was not very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think that would be a little bit of a problem. since your diagnosis, have you been able to discover different and new ways of dealing with the world? Are you in therapy? Did you join any kind of a support group? Did you become a little bit more outgoing in that way?
I do have some support services that I regularly take part in, you know, counseling and just community services. As I mentioned before, I'm still learning about the ways of thinking differently. And with autism, you do process things differently. I tend to be a very visual thinker. I tend to actually process thoughts in pictures instead of words.
Wow, that would make you a great photographer.
You would think so.
I
don't think I was blessed in that capacity.
Uh-huh. I want to ask you this, too. Do they have any kind of medications that are helpful for people with autism at this point in time?
I don't believe so. There really is no treatment, per se, for autism.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a process of learning how to compensate for things that, you know, maybe shortcomings or just difficulties. Maybe I shouldn't say shortcomings, but just, you know, working around the difficulties, you know, realizing why you think or process things the way that you do, and finding different ways of working around any difficulties. There isn't a pill or anything or any kind of, you know, medical treatment for autism.
Yeah, that's surprising to me. They seem to be coming out with drugs for everything else. I also wanted to ask you this. You say that you have trouble making eye contact for any amount of time with other people. How do you deal with that? You seem to be doing it well here.
It's harder when it's someone that I don't know. I tend to not hold eye contact for a long time, and that's one of the hallmarks of autism. It's uncomfortable. I don't know why.
Oh, I was just going to say, I wonder why. Do you start becoming self-conscious?
Probably. I think that figures into it. But it's something that I've always had a problem with.
Yeah.
And it's more prevalent with people I don't know.
Yeah, well, that makes sense to me. And you said there's no medications that can help autism, but do you find yourself becoming anxious or having any other kind of symptoms that could be treated with drugs, you know?
I do also have depression and anxiety, which I am treated for.
Did that do anything to the autism symptoms?
No, not that I am aware of.
Hmm.
But they're all connected in some way.
Is that true? Are a lot of people with autism have depression?
Yes, I believe so.
That's something I wouldn't have known. So that might be the first thing that people go to get diagnosed, right? They don't know they're autistic, but
yeah.
They're extremely depressed. And
I think the depression becomes a factor because autistic people tend to be so isolated. They don't know how to socialize very well, so they're isolated. They get lonely, then depression. So it's, you know,
it goes hand in hand.
It goes
almost.
Hand in yeah. hand in most cases.
Wow. Wow, that is a lot to deal with, Peter. It amazes me. Do you think if you'd been diagnosed earlier in life, you would have, you know, approached this in a different way or had different ways to deal with it? Or do you think it's a good thing to have been diagnosed and not have to worry about it until now?
I'm not sure it would have been any different if I had been diagnosed earlier in life.
Why is that? You don't think you'd have more anxiety or something? It seems to me that if you were diagnosed really early, you might, you know, be obsessed with it.
It's really hard to say. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Now tell me, since you've been going through this all your life, even though you haven't known about it, what would you recommend to parents of children with autism? Is there any tricks or tips that you'd give them on how to treat a child this way?
I don't really have the experience to be able to offer that kind of advice, other than I would say, if you're seeing some difficulties maybe in your child and you suspect that they might be exhibiting symptoms of autism, at least get it checked out.
Yeah.
There's no harm in getting it checked out. And just, you know, be patient.
Yeah. And what about for yourself, though? How would you want to tell people on how to treat somebody with symptoms of autism? I mean, obviously you were bullied and all kinds of things happened to you. Do you think that's attributed to the autism?
Probably in a way, because I was so quiet and isolated.
And not making eye contact and, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would be your tips to somebody suffering from autism?
Just learn how you can cope with difficult situations and struggles that you face. Just reach out and ask for help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would you recommend that people go into therapy?
If they feel that it would benefit them, sure.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that isolation that you spoke about, it seems like somebody needs somebody to help them through this, you know, and if people
yeah.
are afraid to make friends or reluctant, a therapist would be a, you know, an alternative.
Yeah, you should never be afraid to reach out and seek help if you really don't know where to turn, like where to find answers to these questions you might have. Always ask for help. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you worry about the stigma of autism? Because some people have been dealing with this all their lives and, you know, they're in different states than you are. Do you feel the stigma?
I don't really feel the stigma. I just, you know, see it as another thing to basically add to my resume, if you will.
Now,
my
that's
life
a way
experience.
Of doing it. Ah.
It's, like I said, just getting the diagnosis really is, it's on paper now saying what I really knew
yeah.
all along. So,
do you think that diagnosis helped you corral some of your creativity in some way?
Because
you say you write. Do you write creative work?
Not really. I liked writing more when I was younger, but I don't do it now. I've always had a creative mind, I think, but I don't have a good way to express it.
Hmm. Well, I have to say you were a great DJ. You were really good. It felt like you were connecting with people in great ways to me. And you have a beautiful voice. So, were you ever encouraged? Well, since you got this diagnosis, it's been really recent. I was just wondering if they think diet or any kind of thing like stay away from caffeine or alcohol is being suggested to help this.
There are things that are suggested. Nothing specific that I can really relate right now, but there are some things that I could look into that might help with the anxiety, you know, changes in diet. And it's a long process, really.
That you've been on for a long time prior to the diagnosis, right?
Yes. I mean, it's something that I've lived with for 53 years, so it's going to take a minute to figure out how to process all of these life experiences.
And you can probably go back and go, oh, I understand what I was doing back then.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I mean, I was thinking about the fact that you were a DJ and had an incredibly creative life as a DJ and communicating with people. Are you glad you had that career? And do you think that did help you?
I do. I think it helped me quite a bit to express what I had basically bottled up inside for so many years. It was just a nice, creative way to express myself in communicating and also just in the love of music. It was a great thing to get into, you know, to enjoy music and get paid to enjoy music.
Oh, yeah. And music is a universal language. You know, you have trouble with language. I would think music would be a great friend.
Yeah, it's very nice to just use music as a tool to relax. And it is a universal language, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Peter, we're almost out of time. Anything in the future going on with you in regard to creative work or being a DJ or and anything else going on? I know you're dealing with all this stuff right now.
Nothing really immediately, but I'm still keeping an open mind as far as returning to radio.
Mm.
I did that for, you know, quite a number of years, so it's something that's always going to be a part of me.
Oh, yeah.
And I would enjoy getting back to doing it in a commercial capacity if the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, well, I hope it does. You were great. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. This was a very enlightening thing for me to research and to have you talk about. Wow. I'd never heard of anybody being diagnosed at 53, so it's quite enlightening to me.
It is.
Thank you. Again, good luck in the future.
Thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.